I got to admit, it felt good yesterday to just open up the ESPN app and look at a score and know, you know, there's something, there's this beacon of light, there's this hope for the future. All sports can look right now in Orlando, not to the NBA, not yet, no, to MLS and say, finally, we've got the return. It looks like, you know, this is that moment of hope. It's Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the show. Penzo, Performance Line, Jason Fitz in for Mike and Trey, sitting with Mike Golic Jr. And Mike, I mean, just knowing that the MLS was back yesterday, there was like a strange comfort to me as I sat there and thought, all right, things are getting back to normal.
It's been nice, and we've seen so many sports start to come back. We've seen golf, NASCAR, and UFC already back in this country. But as we waited for team sports, the things that come back that we knew had an extra layer of difficulty in their return, now with, you know, the National Women's Soccer League has already been back for a little while at this point, and we have the MLS's back tournament coming back here now. And so I have to ask, we're excited to welcome in Taylor Twellman, our ESPN soccer analyst on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Taylor, the only gripe I have is the name of the tournament, the MLS's back tournament. We couldn't come up with something slightly more original.
Oh, boy, Junior. I thought the only problem you had was my mug being all over your screen yesterday. Usually that's a problem for you and I. I don't know. I mean, we could have named it a million things because it's 2020, and honestly, anything flies right now, which is kind of part of there. So MLS is back as a tongue twister. I'm calling it the tournament. I'm staying with the tournament, and that's what I'm doing, because what else am I going to – MLS is back. Say that five times fast. It's almost as bad as Toy Boat.
I mean,
it's a great point.
Twellman, I got to ask. Like, there are days that I just walk in the room – and I look at my hair, and I'm like, you know what? It's going to be a good show today because my hair looks good. When your hair always looks as good as yours does, like, is there a factor for, like, I mean, because you're right. Your face was all over TV yesterday, and I just kept thinking, that guy, he's got it all, Twellman. Like, I'm not sure how to even feel about it anymore.
It's hard. It's not easy. It's extremely difficult. And for all the listeners and viewers at home, I want your sympathy. You know, when you wake up and look in the mirror and you're like, wow, I really don't need to do anything today. That's a good feeling. Now, it's not as good as the thigh meat that Junior's been bringing over the last, I'd say, 3 or 4 months during this pandemic, but it's pretty close.
No, I don't know that anything tops the thigh. I'm surrounded by too much beauty for a man of my stature. So let's ask you some real questions here as we take a look at MLS returning. All eyes from all leagues are going to be on this return. So what do you think other leagues right now can learn from the way the MLS is handling this?
Well, the NBA is 100% looking at this with bifocals on, with a magnifying glass, just the bubble, right? And the one thing that has stood out to me, you guys, is that this. Every state has treated the COVID-19 pandemic differently. And so that includes in your home market testing, quarantines, and what we've seen with FC Dallas and Nashville. If you take those two teams out of the bubble, 634 players have been tested. One was positive. 3 days later, that was a false positive. So it really was and is comes down to FC Dallas, the Dallas market, and the Nashville market. And so the leagues have to be extremely careful. And the NBA is looking at this because when you bring the athletes in, you are going to see positives. That's not the issue. The issue is your bubble secure enough to let them stay in quarantine, stay away from everybody else that has arrived, so the others can prosper? Because that is an unbelievable ratio, gentlemen, that if you've got 634 players and it's now at zero positive, then you could actually put on this tournament for a month. But if each individual market is treating it this way, then Fitz, that's the kind of conversation we're going to have. And the NBA is going to look at that. Major League Baseball is a completely different situation because they're going into home markets to play games. The NHL is looking at this, obviously, with their situations in the bubbles and whatnot. But I think it's opened up a lot of eyes that, you know what? You've got 48 states mainland, and it's not easy because, as a whole, we've done everything regarding our local markets differently. And so when you come into a bubble, you're almost dealing with each individual state and those teams with how they've handled the pandemic.
Taylor Tallman with us, our ESPN soccer analyst here on Golic and Wingo. And Taylor, looking at the on-the-field portion, because that was one of the other things that we talked about in regards to the NFL yesterday, was concerned by the players of the chance of injury increasing when they've come back, how long it's going to take guys to get into shape. So from what you saw last night, we had Orlando City beating Inter Miami 2-1 last night. What did you see on the field, and what have you felt like has been the reaction so far to a return to play after such a long layoff?
Good question. Good question, Mike, because I think so many people were watching the Bundesliga, England, La Liga, Serie A, and you got to remember, those leagues are finishing their seasons. This league is starting their season again. And what I mean by that is, 6 of the last 8 months, majority of these players have not been playing games. And so injuries is a huge part of this. Now, what's changed, and rightfully so, and anyone says that it's a gimmick, it's not. You have hydration breaks, which if the weather's hot enough, that's already been in there, but now these are mandatory. But more importantly, 5 substitutions per team. And that's the most important thing there. And the one thing I noticed on the field, to answer your question, is I didn't know what it's going to look like, but I think there's going to be a trend. You're going to see a ton of goals scored after the 60th minute. And the reason why is, when you only have 3 subs in a typical professional soccer game, Mike and Fitz, that only allows a coach 3 times to change a game. Now you've got a hydration break, which is a built-in timeout, and you've got, yes, those 3 instances to make changes, but you can make 5 substitutions. So you can completely change a game. Not every player's fit for 90 minutes. They're not expected to be. So the game's going to open up, and that's exactly why you saw Orlando City, Miami turn it up, I think, and be a little bit more open and expansive and entertaining in the last 25 to 35 minutes.
We're talking to ESPN soccer analyst Taylor Twellman on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Golic and Wingo, Jason Fitz in for Trey. Mike, you just mentioned those changes and the benefits. Any chance that they become permanent fixtures in the way MLS plays?
No, absolutely not. This is simply a FIFA way to look at it, and they are 100% correct in looking at it, Fitz, of just saying we need to accommodate the players and the technical staffs and the coaches when you're trying to play X number of games in a short amount of time, and also allow these players to play themselves into fitness. So this will not be a permanent thing. Hydration breaks there, right? That was there for the last World Cup. That depends on, you know, a temperature reading and the humidity and all that. I'm not a meteorologist, so I'll stay away from that. But the 5 substitutions, that's temporary. That will not be permanent.
Taylor, the other thing that we saw last night that I think we can expect to be, maybe if not permanent's the right word, a huge part of the conversation going forward, was the demonstration before the game.
Yeah.
We saw players taking a knee, a moment there with Black Lives Matter at the center of the conversation. For the MLS, what is the conversation look like going forward, and the action that's going to accompany it, now that we're seeing this is going to be part of what we see during this tournament?
Well, you guys have heard me use the buzzword inclusive a ton, especially over the last, I'd say, 2.5 years since the men's national team failed to qualify for the World Cup. And this is what I'm talking about. You know, soccer is the most racist sport in the world, but it's not so apparent in the United States. And yet, there is a lack of black player in our country from the United States. And what I mean by that is, there has been exponentially great players in this world. Thierry Henry is a manager for Montreal Impact, one top 25 to 30 best players ever in the world. And I spoke with him yesterday, and he just said, you tell me the next time the great black player immediately turns up in a front office, immediately turns up as a coach, immediately turns up in a power position in football, soccer around the world. And the answer is, it doesn't. Now, for the United States, gentlemen, that's the real issue. When the sport is so expensive to play, it's very similar to baseball. And when you talk to anyone inside baseball that looks at the participation rates and what it is, it's too expensive now. And so now you lose those athletes. That's where soccer has to grow, because soccer around the world is the poor sport. That's what everyone plays. Yet here in the United States, soccer is actually the expensive sport. It really is an apples to oranges conversation. And when you change that, I firmly believe you will have the participation rate from black athletes that will go higher because it's real money now in the league. You can make the same amount of money that you can in other sports. You can make it quicker and you can play longer. So I just think at the younger rates, U.S. soccer has to do a much better job. And this is not a Major League Soccer issue. It's a culture issue. Soccer cannot be the most expensive sport. It goes against the grain of what the nature of the sport is. You need a ball, and you need a bunch of guys or girls to play. That's all you need. Guys, you can make a goal out of anything, and yet we're charging $2,500 to $3,500 a year, similar to baseball, and you're looking in the mirror saying, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense.
As always, follow him on Twitter, at Taylor Twellman. Man, you do such a spectacular job of covering the sport that you love. I love watching you do it and love listening to you doing it. Fun to have you back on TV, my friend. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, good hearing your voice, boys.
Taylor Twellman. I love the honesty with which he approaches the game in general. And I've had the chance to work with Taylor a lot on some of these things. And I think one of the most spectacular parts of the way he covers soccer is that he does it so honestly for the good of what the sport needs to do to continue to grow. Go Look and We Go, presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. Coming up, we all want college football this fall. In fact, nobody more than Mike and I. But does spring give us a better chance to have a season? That's next. Go Look and We Go on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. If I was making a 2020 bingo card full of things that you wouldn't expect on that card somewhere in the impossible to get space would be the Ivy League impacts all of college football. That's not something we're used to happening, but that's exactly what happened yesterday as the Ivy League announced that they are postponing fall sports and specifically in their announcement used the word cancel around football. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Jason Fitz in for Trey and Mike. Sit with Mike Golic Jr., represented by Progressive Insurance. And Mike, you know, this leads to at least a conversation. And we have to be clear here. The Ivy League is much smaller. Monetarily, there are much different stakes. We can acknowledge all of those things. But still, when a college conference comes in full of some of the smartest colleges we have in America, and they decide it's not worth the risk to play this fall, it does have to at least open the what does this mean can of worms for the rest of college football.
It's a plot point that we start to keep track of. And a lot of people are going to bring that up because, remember, in the spring, the Ivies are among the first to pull out on spring sports and say they were going to stop that. And it affected a lot of things. And then we saw it. There were a lot of people saying the Ivies are doing this prematurely in the spring. They're doing it because they're so committed to academics, because athletics are less of a priority. And then we saw everything that happened with the ACC tournament, everything that ended up having with the NCAA tournament, all these spring sports. And so people are now looking at that as, all right, was that correlation or was that causation? And how do we address that with the football landscape going forward?
Well, and now it leads to a question, because as we try and figure out what college football could look like in the fall, there is at least the rumbling, the conversation that seems to be getting louder about the possibility that college football could be moved to spring. And that's a difficult proposition. Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, spoke about that on Freddie and Fitzsimmons last night.
So if you've got four or five reasons why you have to stop, are those four or five reasons still going to be there come February or March when you contemplate the start of spring football? And what I've not heard is clarity that, oh, no, you know, these circumstances will be very different. And that's the answer. That's the information that's really needed to inform that decision. You know, possibly could that ever happen? I would never be the one to say no, but you have to think about the evaluation points that lead you in that direction. And will you have substantially different information that inform that decision-making 6 months from now?
In my likelihood, it all boils down to one thing that he's talking about there is the likelihood of a vaccine, right? Like,
I think so. I think there's when you listen to what he's saying, he's basically not saying, is it safe to play in the fall? He's saying, will we know it's demonstrably safer to play in the spring, which is sort of an eye-opening just sentiment to be really controlling everything. Like, because we have yet to hear Greg Sankey or anybody else really come with knowledge that says it's safe to play in the fall. I understand his argument. We don't know that it'll be safer to play in the spring. And you're right. Maybe we have a vaccine. But at some point, if it's not safe to play now, why not postpone until the spring? And if it's not safe to play then cancel the season.
Yeah, and I think they're treating all of this as a last option. Like, the Ivy made this decision early because the finances govern them far less than it does the Power Five. Power Fives are going to wait until they're absolutely as close to this thing as possible to make the final call on whatever they do in all this. And he mentioned trying to have information to make this safe. And their wonder is it going to be any safer when it comes to that? To me, that is, again, all tied to how likely are we to have a vaccine? How likely are we to have all of these same hotbeds that we're seeing right now? Texas, Florida, a lot of places where college football gets played, experiencing these major spikes in all this and our ability to control this, because this comes along with Ohio State halting its summer workouts for a week because of a rash of tests. The University of North Carolina, 37 positive tests there that have also halted workouts there, have we seen. So these things starting to pop up over the summer. And then the backdrop of this in what we're dealing with here. Jim Harbaugh also spoke yesterday about what his thoughts on this and what you said about Greg Sankey and the information there and college football relative to the virus. Here is how Jim Harbaugh framed his view of college football and the virus and their relationship.
But, you know, COVID is part of our society. Wasn't caused by football or caused by sports. And you know, there's no expert view right now that I'm aware of, or that are, you know, agreeing expert views that, you know, sports, you know, is going to make that worse. It's part of our society. We're going to have to deal with it. The, you know, and these kids got to have to do the same thing. You know, they've got to go to school. They're, you know, they've been training their whole lives for the opportunity to play their sport. And, you know, that's my view with the knowledge that we have and time to learn more about it, that, you know, it would be my responsibility, our responsibility, and the players' responsibility also, you know, keep themselves safe, and also, you know, get the schooling and the training that they need.
The most difficult part for me to hear in that entire conversation is around the concept that at some point you just got to get out there and do it. And he's not saying that they got to do it. I mean, as much as he wants to couch it under, we got to do it for the kids, this is about you got to do it for the money, right? So, you know, if the money is the mitigating factor that is going to force this to happen one way or the other, then that only pushes my mind to think that spring becomes more and more of a possibility, because the chances that we see college football come in and just throw in the towel, like wave the white flag, I don't see that happening right now when there could still be the chance of a vaccine. So to me, it's like they're going to try everything. They're going to do their damnedest to play now. And if they can't, they're going to hold that decision off till spring, but they're not going to wholesale come out as it appears the Ivy League has done and said, just we're out for the year.
But I guess that's the thing, is like, I can't separate completely what's happened in the Ivy from the notion of what Jim Harbaugh is trying to sell you, which is basically sports aren't related to this virus in any way. We didn't cause it, and it's just a part of society in Jim Harbaugh's mind, and we're not going to make it worse, because that's all what your definition of worse is, right? Like, if you've got a bunch of college athletes, and we got 128 D1 schools and college football teams, you're carrying maybe over, you know, 100 plus guys on the roster, in some cases 120 plus. What's your definition of worse? If someone gets really sick, if people start showing symptoms, if a coach or a player or someone on there dies all of a sudden in this, like, you can move the goalposts on what worse looks like enough to justify that in your head if you're Jim Harbaugh or anyone else. And that's the worry, is that's the pervasive idea, is we got to do this because we've been training a long time to do this. Like, no, the Ivies just showed you the only reason you've got to do any of this is because you have a bunch of athletic departments that prop themselves up on what football provides for them, which is tons and tons of money on the backs of kids that aren't getting paid.
I have to also stress, I think you made a very important part of this conversation that hasn't been vocalized enough, because when you start to talk about what it means for college football moving forward, the coaches have not been, I know we talk about the kids a lot because you and I agree that the kids don't have a voice to fight for themselves. They're not well represented. They don't have a lot of options. There is a very real scenario where coaches are put into high risk situations this year. God forbid it happen, but there is a very real scenario where a coach could be affected by this, and we know the effect that COVID-19 has at an escalated age rate. So, you know, you start talking about a coach that's in his 60s or 70s putting himself in this situation of risk, the black eye for college football of forcing everybody to play and then, God forbid, having a coach die because of COVID-19 is absolutely – it's a stunning thought that hasn't gotten enough conversation.
Well, and we had Herm Edwards on, Arizona State's head coach, and he talked about that. He brought up, you know, like what happens if it – you know, even if it's not the worst case scenario in all this, you have a bunch of coaches go down. How are you going to operate? And that's the other part of this is – there's the moral side of this, which feels like it continues to get lost, where even if it's not death, like this is a virus that we've heard can have cause irreparable harm to your lungs, to the things that quite literally help athletes do what they'd like to do going forward, potentially sacrificing that in all of this. But then there's the practical part of this, and this is the only part that college football is going to listen to, sadly, in all this, because we'll talk to Heather Dinich in a little bit about what makes this decision. It's the virus first and foremost, but I saw her referencing it last night. It's then the people far down on the list are coaches or any of the football people in all this. So it's going to be the university presidents, the athletic directors, all these people are going to have far more influence on this. But it's going to be influenced by the practicality of it. So let's look at that. The practicality of moving a season versus doing it in the fall. Because you do it in the fall right now, and the thing that you're most worried about is a disruption of your season, right? What we're seeing in these summer workouts, if that takes place during the season, catastrophe. You can start it, but your ability to finish it. We heard that from J.C. Treader, the NFLPA's president, on the NFL season that's going to mimic this. But if you start it and you're not able to finish it, it's a financial disaster for you, right?
Right.
Like, and so best case, though, if you go through it, people don't get sick, you're able to play a season, probably with fewer fans, that's dependent on where you go, versus weighing it against the spring, where you've got the potential for a vaccine and all of this, you've got the potential that might come with that, and that's what you're banking it all on, because with that could come, certainly, more safety for players, easier freedom of movement, people in stands, the ticket revenue that comes from that some places rely on more than others. The problem is, and the thing that they're weighing is, you would be sacrificing likely some of your best players because the NFL doesn't look like it's willing to hold hands with you at this.
Well, and that's a huge point. I mean, they're not going to get a lot of partnership from the NFL because the NFL doesn't have to give a damn about anything other than the NFL. And that's fine. That's the way they want to do business. You're absolutely right. They move it to spring. You're going to see the Trevor Lawrences of the world, but not just the Trevor Lawrences. You're going to see anybody that believes that they've got a good shot at being drafted in the top, what, 4 or 5 rounds is going to look around and say, is it worth the risk of injury that comes with it? So you would see a shell of the college football that we're used to seeing, but at least you get some opportunity. One of the things that I think is difficult about this, and I keep reminding people that this is novel coronavirus. It's never happened before. And I have to remind people of that because imagine if we lived with Twitter and social media in the age where flu was discovered for the first time or trying to figure it out. Like, it's just not easy to figure out. Because remember, this is summer we're in right now, which heat was supposed to end all this, right? Like, heat was supposed to make everything fine. There was a conversation a few months ago about should they move college football to June and July to get ahead of a possible second wave coming in the fall. So I do see some of what Sankey says when he says we don't have any information that tells us it's going to be better, because we keep looking saying, well, maybe weather's going to do this and maybe this is going to happen. All we have is the info right in front of us right now, which today says there's a huge risk to playing these kids. I don't know if that risk is worth it, then just get out there, admit you're taking the risk, admit why you're taking the risk, because you can't afford to lose the money. Be transparent with everybody out there and go out and do it.
It's so interesting in thinking about the risk and in thinking about what we talked about, Ohio State having to shut down their workouts based on the last round of testing, North Carolina having to shut down based on the last round of testing. Ohio has been seeing an uptick in cases. Certainly we've heard about what's going on in the Carolinas. And what just happened last weekend?
4th of July.
Cole Kublik and a bunch of others were saying this is going to be a big test for college football, and we're looking to look around and we're going to see based on what other tests come up this week from other universities. Now, some places have had good news. I saw Notre Dame just put out good news the other day. I think they've tested 250 plus athletes and they had one positive test in that, and that player has already recovered in all this. So it's not all doom and gloom, but 4th of July was a big test, and it looks like we can't draw the perfect conclusion to that because I don't know what everybody did in all of it. But we can look at it and say, at the very least, it's a curious connection, and based on what Cole and others brought up, could be a failed test for the world of college football when it comes to how we're going to operate going forward.
The world of fall sports, Mike. I mean, just look at what we're dealing with MLS. The first matchup in the MLS's back tournament was supposed to be Nashville versus Dallas, and there were so many positive tests for those two teams that they're gone. What happens? I mean, at 20 years in Nashville, I know how they're handling it in Tennessee. What happens when the Vols are expected to play against somebody on their schedule, and what do you know, the night before they test them and they find out they just can't put a team on the field. I think that's a more realistic possibility than people want to admit. And then all of a sudden, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing for the NFL, for college football across the board when full teams aren't going to be allowed to participate? You're just going to, like, I'd love for the Raiders to get 10 wins, even if it means that 10 teams have to forfeit. But that, like, is that the fall we're looking at? Like, those are real conversations.
Can you deal with that disruption versus the prospect of waiting and maybe having to deal with those same problems in a few more relative to the chance you've got at a vaccine? That's what you're chasing with the idea of a spring season.
We've been talking a lot about the college football side of it, but the NFL side of it is also interesting how they're going to handle that. So as we get closer to the return of sports across every landscape, we get more details about how viable that return really is. And as much as we see a plan, sometimes when the details start to emerge, it makes that plan look even harder to execute. That's exactly what's happening in the NFL. Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Jason Fitz in for Trey and Mike, sitting with Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And Mike, the NFL and NFL Players Association have been working on agreements as we get closer to the season. We know that they've reached an agreement on club facility protocol for training camp. Pro Football Talk had a copy of the document out there. Uses a three-tier approach to access to restricted areas, a concept on which the league's prior document was based. So teams must submit to the league a list of the proposed designees under each of the three tiers 1 week before the arrival of players. So this is just one of the many issues that has to be worked out. And it's why I continue to say a plan to return to sports is a beautiful thing. But what are we hearing over the course of the last week? The Players Association has been on several calls, and they're trying to figure out what this actual plan for safety looks like. The closer we get to the NFL, the more these details have to be worked out.
Yeah, and I think the safety one's important because, as we mentioned, this one does not involve any of the type of testing or frequency of testing. That's still got to be worked out in a later agreement. So that's going to be the most important one. Like, I hear everyone crying foul about the escrow conversation that went public and the public backlash anytime money comes up in this. Totally understand that, but that's something that, because this is a league that we talk about, like the NBA, like the NHL, that's a revenue sharing league, that's got that split that's collectively bargained, unlike what Major League Baseball dealt with, that's something that they're going to eventually have, I think, an easier time agreeing on, because those protocols tend to already exist in some form. It's got to be collectively bargained in this new setting. But in general, like for the NBA, I'm sure a lot of people didn't know that in the NBA, part of your salary every year is held in escrow. And then depending on how much money overall comes in, if you hit certain marks, you get all that money. If you don't reach certain marks, it's collectively bargained that that money then goes back to ownership. So these are things that are already happening to an extent. This is obviously a much higher number, and so it's a bit jarring, but that practice is still something that's been around.
Let's be real. At some point, if contracts were easy to negotiate, nobody would get a percentage of them. And I got to remind everybody that. And I hear what Ian Fitzsimmons is saying when he says millionaires and billionaires arguing. I've said it about Major League Baseball several times. There's a difference between a negotiation where something comes public and a long, loud argument from both sides. If we see that from the NFL and players and owners, then I'll be happy to throw them under the bus the same way I have Major League Baseball players and owners. I think it's blind right now to have that argument in the country we're in with everybody dealing with what they're dealing with. Does that mean that there isn't negotiation about money behind the scenes? Of course there is. I mean, at some point, to your point, these things are bargained, they are negotiated, and legalese matters. Like, the little nuance of contracts matters. I mean, and that's across the board with anybody that signs a contract. If you have a contract with ESPN, part of the reason you have an agent help you with it is because you want to pay somebody to take care of these nuances. So I don't want to jump to anything when it comes to the money side. I think that part of what we have to realize, though, is that players are just getting around this information for the NFL, which means you're going to see some recourse. Like, there were reports that Philip Rivers asked a question on the conference call last week of what happens if a player is asymptomatic and fails a COVID-19 test before the Super Bowl. Does he have to sit? The answer was yes. I mean, players are still trying to get all of the information just like fans are. And as they get that information, they're going to have to decide on an individual basis if they're comfortable. And that's, I think, the lost part in the discussion about moving forward in the fall is it's not as simple as football's back. It's football's here. What's it mean for the people that are actually putting themselves at risk, and are they comfortable with that risk? Those are all completely separate conversations.
What you just said is the most apt version of this. Anyone can say, and it's easy to say, football's back. We had J.C. Treader on the Brown Center and the president of the NFLPA yesterday, and he said it's not just about coming back.
Our focus has to be on not just getting back. Anybody can get back. It's about staying back. And it's about finishing a season and not finding ourselves in a position that we get back there and then we get shut down midway through or early on. That's kind of worst case scenario for everybody. So I think every decision we make needs to be about mitigating as much risk as possible and avoiding that worst case scenario. And we know we'll never be able to get rid of all risk, but every decision that we don't make to mitigate as much risk as possible is going to cost us.
And I guess the thing that concerns me the most about all the decisions around mitigating risk seems to be kind of what you talked about there, is all of this just being discussed in a real way for the first time now? Because you had all this time period. Part of what was ugly about Major League Baseball was all of it took place over such a long time. We thought you could have been first, and instead we had this argument dragged out over months between both sides. While it would have been ugly, I would hope that the players and the league have been having some versions of these conversations a lot sooner than we're hearing.
They should be, but I'm not.
We hope they did. We don't know what right. We hope they did.
But would anybody be shocked to find out that the NFL as an overall brand wasn't forward thinking and wasn't proactive, but instead is reactive? I mean, there is sort of a proof is in the pudding for past actions. So I want to believe with you that there's some element of that. I'm just not sure. I think just realistically, we got to get used to a world where the players are going to be fighting this. And importantly, we got to get used to a world where you may wake up on Sunday and find out that your favorite team's quarterback is out because of a failed test, not just for that game, but for the next game and for the next game. I mean, this is going to be a real part of what affects the season. We'll keep breaking it down, but coming up, Buster's been a negative Nelly when it comes to the odds of playing baseball. Is he more positive with his mood today? He joins us next, but first
is word from DraftKings. You know what you might wake up with on Sunday, Jason?
$1 million.
A result from Fight Island.
Ooh.
How's that sound?
I want it.
Yeah, this Saturday, fighters taking their talents to Abu Dhabi for UFC 251. And DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is going to put you in the center of the action starting this Thursday. You get a free shot at a $1 million top prize with your first deposit.
Oh, Fight Island. I just want to say Fight Island.
Man, I can't tell you who would get eaten alive quicker than you on Fight Island.
Oh,
God. Bad news, man. Yeah,
no, Lord of the Flies. I'm the one that's out first.
The attitude I'm hearing around the league is, look, it's going to be great if we win a World Series. It's almost going to be just as good if we can get there.
There were a lot of guys that are on the fence that decided to try to play to see how this was going to go.
If Mike Trout isn't sure if he's going to play, then I think everybody else in Major League Baseball has to be thinking the same way.
We were going to have our results within 48 hours.
It's remarkable to me just the weight that this carries.
Hopefully that's something that we can address and improve moving forward.
Golic & Wingo is brought to you by Pennzoil. Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas and not crude. Gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4A wear testing using SAE 5W30.
It's Golic & Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. Jason Fitz, in for Trey Wingo, and Mike Golic. Sit with Mike Golic Jr. We talked a little baseball earlier, and now we're going to do it again. With one of the best. I feel like when you introduce him, like, I just really need that big arena voice because he deserves it. ESPN Major League Baseball senior writer Buster Olney joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Buster, good morning. Thanks so much for the time, my friend. You now that we've got 66 confirmed positive cases during the MLB intake period, you had the 5% prediction that we would get baseball. Where are you right now on positivity, Buster?
Yeah, and the way that I spend my days is to call around to different teams and say, how's it going for you guys? And at this point, I would put it at, to start the season, which would start 2 weeks from today, I'd put it at around 30 to 40%, and to get through the season, I still think 0%. It's interesting because clearly there are teams that have had real issues and canceled workouts, the Nationals, the Giants, the Athletics. Most of the teams I talk to are saying, you know what, it's going pretty well. Like, the testing results are coming back. We're getting our work in. Things are going okay. The ones that get the most attention, of course, are the teams that are having the issues.
And Buster, I guess to that extent, there's been so much that we plan for, and positive tests were one of those things that we certainly have become accustomed to as leagues return. As players have come back to facilities and teams have been together again, has there been anything that you've heard from there that surprised them about the process of coming back?
First off, they have been impressed with the level of how precise a lot of the health and safety protocol are within the team bubble, so to speak, or at the team site. And they have felt like that for the most part, they have taken it seriously. But, you know, the difference between Major League Baseball and the NBA or potentially the NHL is the fact that these guys aren't living in bubbles. And maybe a, you know, instructive situation that we could cite would be what happened with the Cleveland Indians. There's no team that has better leadership than the Indians, with Terry Francona, you know, Francisco Lindor, and they employed their players. Hey, remember your teammates and hold together. And then over the weekend, Franmil Reyes, one of their outfielders, was seen in social media at a July 4th party. And that is the fragility of this whole thing. As one staffer said to me, the whole thing is only as good as the weakest link. And the weakest links exist.
We're talking to ESPN Major League Baseball senior writer Buster Olney on Golic and Wingo. So, Buster, you've mentioned the word bubble a few times, and obviously we know that Major League Baseball is not putting everybody in one location, but you have 0% confidence we'll get through the entire season. Is there a plan B at some point for what they could do if this big outbreak forces them to try and look at some sort of bubble scenario?
No, I don't think there wouldn't be enough time. The practicality of it is that the calendar would run out for them to make an adjustment that big. Look, all these teams, when we talk about sites where they're playing, you know, they're building in safety nets, a B, a C, a D. You know, it wouldn't shock me at some point, for example, if you see a spike in numbers in one particular municipality, if a team winds up playing in a minor league park or shifting to another major league park. I think they're open-minded. But the fact is that, you know, the analogy I've used is that baseball is a rowboat in a hurricane. And I think to make that big of an adjustment, there just simply wouldn't be enough time for that.
Buster, you mentioned the strong leadership of teams and who people are looking towards. I'm curious right now, as we've heard some players talk about Mike Trout very, very publicly being one of them as a guy who's still unsure about his future, are there groups of players that Major League Baseball is still watching that worry could trigger a larger exodus?
And I think what happened with Freddie Freeman over the weekend was really, was telling. Where, you know, Freddie Freeman is as respected a player as there is in baseball. And so when word, you know, filtered out that not only had he tested positive, but he was sick and he had a spike in temperature. And Nick Markakis, his teammate, you know, as tough a player as there is in baseball, called him. And after that conversation and hearing how Freddie wasn't doing well, Nick Markakis decides to walk away. I think that the two players that people are watching in the game right now are Trout, and it wouldn't shock me if he were to walk away for at least a period of time because his wife Jessica is due to have their first child in early August. And Buster Posey is someone we're all watching. The Giants catcher, he's left the team for what has been said by Gabe Kapler, their manager, to be personal reasons. We heard Buster last week talk about, you know, being concerned. And the Giants are one of the teams that have had these issues with the testing. And I, let's face it, if Buster Posey walks away, it might make it more likely that other players will as well.
Buster, because of their age, managers are considered a higher risk than players. How comfortable are they being involved in this?
They're concerned. You know, one staffer that I know is at high risk, you know, his feeling is, look, I just can't imagine not being around it. You know, for that particular person, his feeling is, yes, I understand the risk, but I'm going to plow ahead and try to make it work. We've seen other coaches walk away. You know, people around the game have talked about Rocco Baldelli, the manager of the Twins, who has a difficult medical history, and they wondered how he's doing. It seems like they're all pushing ahead and trusting the health and safety protocol that the teams are employing. As they say, that has been roundly praised by people I've talked to, how they feel like that the teams, the medical staffs within the bubbles, team facilities are actually being really diligent.
As always, great stuff. Buster Olney joined us. Buster, thanks so much. Stay safe, my friend. Thanks for hanging out with us.
All right, guys. Thank you.
You know, Mike, all of this is so fragile. And I think that's what I take away from it. Like, you can be a team that handles it perfectly, but if your opponent has one weak link, you have no idea how that's going to impact your ability to actually play games. I mean, that's the craziest part of all of this.
Yeah, and I think, but you saw there from Buster, the latest round of information that he gathered and all this, what he mentioned there foremost, people are very pleasantly surprised by how diligent, how buttoned up the medical side of this is. And that's what we've talked about for everybody, is you've got to give yourself the best chance. But as he talked about, the worry is still what everyone's worry is, not starting, but finishing.
Well, and if that's his worry with Major League Baseball, I will again say I feel like the NFL is looking at Major League Baseball as their real litmus test, right? They're looking at that one saying, much like us, they're going to travel and they're going to put themselves at risk. And so if there's 0% confidence in baseball, I don't know why we have confidence in football.
That's why I've said no one is more upset with Major League Baseball and their failed labor agreements and the months of bickering than the NFL, because if baseball had been back first, they would have had a lot longer time to gather this information than what they're doing right now.
Well, and all eyes are going to be on how the NFL continues to adapt and how every sport figures out a way to navigate through this. But it's hard to feel positive day in and day out. We're trying. We're doing our best. Coming up, Steven Jackson, obviously, he's been in the news. He doubled down and then apologized. How do we move forward from it? L. Duncan joins us next. Go Look and Wingo on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.